This is the Dealer News Today podcast, the podcast for automotive executives and the professionals who support them.
Well, hey there, folks, and welcome to Dealer News Today. Hey, you're here, I'm here, we're all here, and you know what? I appreciate it. And we're just rocking and rolling here with episode 12 of season 6. That's right, a lot of great past episodes and shows that you can listen to on demand whenever you'd like at dealernewstoday.com or, you know, wherever you get your podcasts. You know, all the usual suspects. Follow us on social media at Dealer News Today. I am your host, Derek D. Yep, the guy you may have randomly seen in that one coffee commercial, that VW commercial, that CarShield commercial, and a bunch of others and more to come. And if you're like, wait, who is this dude? Well, DerekD.com will fix that for you. But enough about me. Let's jump into this episode. We got a great guest for you today. He's one of those guys that just loves his job and has stayed with the same company for 3 decades. That's right. He champions a lot of great causes. He knows a ton about the auto dealership industry, and he's the CFO and COO of Finlay Auto Group. I'm talking about Tyler Corder. Tyler, thanks for coming on DNT.
Thank you. It's great to be here. Good to talk to you.
Yeah, absolutely. Good to talk to you as well. Now, you're originally from Montana, right?
That's correct. Grew up on a wheat farm out in the middle of nowhere.
A wheat farm in the middle of nowhere. You know, I've never been to Montana. I know it's beautiful. I need to go. I want to visit.
Yep. It's go in the summertime. It's a little cold in the winter.
Yeah, well, I'd say. Well, I mean, I'm a snowboarder too. So, I mean, that would that'd be pretty awesome. And, you know, nice little cabin with the fire and everything, you know.
There you go.
I just want to experience. I know it's beautiful out there. I've been to a lot of states, never Montana. So that's definitely on the list. But now you're in Vegas, right?
I am. I'm in Sin City. So it's a big change from where I grew up. But I love Las Vegas. Lots happening here. So it's a good place to be.
Now, did you move there when you joined Finlay Auto Group, or what brought you to Vegas?
Before I got on the dealership side, I worked for General Motors for GMAC financing for a number of years, and okay. I got transferred to Las Vegas as the branch manager here, and that's how I met the Finleys and ended up going to work with Finlay Automotive Group.
So I've been saying Finlay. It's Finlay.
Yes, Finlay. Yes.
Okay, Finlay Auto Group. Okay, yeah, just the way the spelling is, so it kind of looks. Okay, Finlay Auto Group. All right, cool. And so you joined Finlay Auto Group in... what, 94 I read? So you're about 30 years in and just this
that's
company.
That's right. This is my 29 years in for sure.
Wow. That's longevity. I always tell people, I like to hear when someone's been with one company for so long, because it shows that A, they've moved up and B, that they love it and they like the company. You know what I mean? Instead of jumping around, it's like, it says something for you. And it also says something for Finlay Auto Group.
Yeah. And it's, it was a really small organization when I joined. We had 4 dealerships. And so we've got 35 in 5 different states. So
wow,
it's been fun. It's been a fun ride because we got to create the company culture and everything as we went. So it's been very enjoyable from that standpoint.
Wow. So 4 to 35, and you said in 5 states, which states? So I'm assuming, Nevada? So
we're headquartered here in Nevada. We have stores in Arizona, Utah, Idaho, and Washington.
Okay, wow. And I'm assuming, is Finlay Auto Group still planning to expand more and more? I mean, I guess it's always...
Yeah, we're always looking for opportunities. We're not out actively trying to buy other dealerships necessarily, but as opportunities present themselves, we're always looking for growth opportunities.
Yeah, for sure. Because I know mergers and acquisitions have been blowing up. It was during, you know, COVID and stuff.
There's still quite a bit of activity going on in the buy-sell market.
Yeah, I'm sure. Has that died down a little bit, though?
I think a little bit right now because, you know, the interest rates have gone up. And so some buyers are financing things, and it's become much less economical to go out and take on debt to acquire something new.
Right. Yeah. So you're the CFO, Chief Financial Officer, and Chief Operating Officer for Finlay Auto Group, 35 dealerships. Mm-hmm. You went to Montana State University. What are your degrees in? Finance or?
So I have a degree in business management from Montana State. And then I studied for a while. I didn't complete the program, but I studied at UNLV in the MBA program for a couple of years.
Oh, okay. Awesome. So yeah, definitely qualified, and you've been doing it a real long time. And I ask everyone this question at the beginning of the show. You know, because you see people's titles, and you know, you understand what they mean when it's a title. But many people don't know exactly what that entails. So give me an idea of what your day-to-day is. Like today, we're recording this on a Wednesday. What's your typical Wednesday look like?
So we start early. The first thing we do every morning, and it's crazy, I don't have a clerical person do this, I do this myself, is we do a daily sales report. Every dealership in the organization sends in their results from the day before, and then we compile it real quickly and send it back out so everybody sees how everybody did the day before from a sales standpoint. And then we're working on a couple of transactions right now, some real estate deals and so forth. So I'll get involved in those later on today. I have to drive across town to our Kia dealership and meet with some of the Kia executives that are going to be in town today. So that's kind of the typical stuff, meeting with manufacturers, working on some of the transactions we've got going on. I'll talk to some of our general managers about things that are going on in their dealerships today. We'll do a little banking. It's month end, so we've got a lot of rent payments coming and going and so forth. So
sure,
all that sort of thing that we've got going on a daily basis.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, it is fun.
To each their own, yeah. I wonder, do you ever... there's 35 dealerships. Are you traveling to any of those other dealerships fairly often or not that often? Or what's the deal there?
So less now as we've gotten bigger, but we've kind of structured our organization now where there are three of us that are kind of operations managers that oversee a certain number of dealerships. So two of the Finleys, Justin Finley and Robbie Finley, oversee about 11 or 12 dealerships each. And then I have about 10 that report directly to me.
Oh, wow.
So I will travel to those dealerships,
right.
And then Robbie and Justin Finley will travel to the dealerships that they oversee directly. So I don't get some of the dealerships. I don't get into, it's pretty rare that I'll get to some of our dealerships because they're not my direct reports.
Gotcha. Okay. And you're in Vegas. How many dealerships are directly in, like, I know they're in Nevada, but where is there dealerships really close to, let's say, the Vegas Strip?
Yeah, well, so we're our headquarters is in Henderson, Nevada, which is a suburb of Las Vegas. We're about, I think, 10 or 12 miles from the Vegas Strip. And so we're in an auto mall in Henderson where our headquarters is. And we have 8 dealerships here right in this auto mall. So I could walk to about 8 of our dealerships. And then we've got some other dealerships scattered around the Vegas area. And then we have kind of pockets of dealerships. So we have three dealerships in Flagstaff, Arizona, and 4 in Prescott, Arizona, and we have 4 in St. George, Utah, and 2 in Spokane, Washington, and 2 in Reno, Nevada. So we kind of cluster them. It makes it easier to operate, and so that's kind of how we're set up.
Gotcha. Yeah. I mean, that's pretty cool. I love Vegas. I've been there a million times. I live in Jersey, but just random question. Do you ever have someone walk in the dealership and be like, "I just won this amount of money playing craps. I'm here to buy a car."
We're always very suspicious of that. Yeah. I don't know that we've had that exact scenario, but we certainly have a lot of unusual things and celebrities every once in a while that show up and just some craziness that happens just because it's Vegas.
Yeah. Keeps it fun. I bet, in the automotive industry and dealership industry in general, no 2 days seem to be the same. So if you're based in Vegas, I would imagine that's very interesting and could be very fun.
Yeah.
Some
absolutely
good stories there.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's funny. So the supply chain issue, obviously it's still an issue, right? Along with the chip shortages, not as bad as it was. I mean, it's getting better.
But
I don't think it's where it needs to be. How have you worked with your dealerships to improve that supply chain management, I guess you could say?
Well, it's somewhat at the mercy of the manufacturer.
Sure.
On that. But what we focus on is the turn rate. So we don't want to have inventory as vehicles come, sell them quickly because it's what they call the programs. Other vehicle in our allocation, if we have unsold vehicles, not earning new vehicles, and so it's important that we work that and our turn rate and those allocations so that the limited number of vehicles that are being shipped, that we're getting our share or more than our share.
I'm sorry, it was cutting in and out a little bit right there, but it seems to be we're back, but I got the gist of that.
Okay.
Does it seem to be that it's going in the direction of, and I've asked other people this, that you don't necessarily need as many cars as you had on the lot beforehand. Like, but when I say beforehand, like before COVID and all that stuff, it's now more of a, you don't need to just have a ton of cars on the lot. You have a good amount, but there's kind of a happy medium now where you don't need as many, but you don't want as less as you had, you know, right at the peak of COVID.
Aside from a dealership having less inventory is that carrying costs are much less. You know, we don't have, you know, if we don't have $10 or $15 million worth of cars on the lot, then it doesn't cost us as much to do business. And so we kind of like the happy medium. I want to have enough that they can find what they want.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I didn't mean to cut you off there, but it was cutting in and out again a bit. And my apologies to the audience. We've tried to correct this multiple times. I think it's better now, or at least not as much. So we're just going to press on. But again, I get what you're saying. And it sounds like you're definitely doing the right thing when it comes to the supply chain management, especially as it's getting better, you know, a happy medium, like you said, of amount of cars on the lot from before and after COVID is kind of where you want to be, especially with the way people buy cars nowadays. You know, it's just easier with online shopping, building your own, doing paperwork in advance. But surely, there's surely been a shift since COVID. Even though COVID sucked, there was good taken away from it, and dealerships learned a lot and made things better, you know?
Yeah, we certainly learned some things through that. So we can operate, we've learned to operate with less inventory, which is a good thing.
Right.
But there's, you know, there's not just supply issues, there's transportation issues has been an issue sometimes for us. When we think, you know, we're telling a customer their vehicle is going to be in next week, and then we find out that it's delayed because of transportation and it takes a lot longer. That's a little bit of an issue. And then, of course, right now we're monitoring the strikes at the big three, because that's going to have a disruption potentially, not just in inventory, but also our parts for our repair shops.
Yep, absolutely.
You know, so there's a lot going on there. But right at the moment, we're kind of in a pretty good place, you know, where we have the right amount of inventory, and it's coming through on a replacement basis. As we're selling cars, we're getting enough to replace it. So it's a good situation at the moment. But there's a lot of things that could change that quickly.
Yeah, definitely. And the strike is happening now, right? It's happening, like it's already in progress.
Yeah, the UAW has walked out.
They did.
It's
okay.
On strike at a number of plants for both. I think all three of the big three.
Yeah, I know. I heard that was happening. I wasn't sure if it was like officially started yet, but I guess yeah. So hopefully, you know, that gets resolved sooner than later, because like you said, that could be a problem with, you know, parts and things of that nature for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, I'm in the union for the actors. I'm in the SAG after. So, you know, I'm on strike right now too.
Really?
So,
wow.
Yeah. I'm an actor, comedian, host, but I hosted I'm a big car guy, hosted a show about cars that was very popular for many years. But anyway, well, we're hoping our strike ends soon too. What we're striking about, I definitely agree with, but there's a lot of issues with the union, but that's a whole other story.
Yeah. So we can have another podcast to talk about that.
Yeah, exactly. What brands do you represent? Do you guys have just basically all of them? You have like luxury division?
We have essentially everything. It's easier for me to tell you what we don't have. We don't have a Ford dealership. We don't have a BMW dealership, and we don't have a Mercedes dealership.
Oh, wow.
Those are kind of the big ones that we don't have. Everything else we pretty much represent.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I would assume you would have Ford, you know, in there somewhere with 35.
Yeah, it's
dealerships.
Funny how it just has never had. We've never had the opportunity. We'd love to have a Ford dealership, but we don't at the current time.
Okay, so no Bimmers, no Mercedes, and no Fords as of right now. But that definitely could change. So you have a lot of other brands. Obviously, do you find that some brands have been able to handle the supply chain we were talking about earlier easier or better than others? Like say during the peak of it, were you able to get Hyundais better than you were able to get VWs, you know, something like that?
Well, there was I don't know that that's necessarily the case. There was a time where nobody could get you anything because of the chips. But yeah, certainly it seemed like we had less of an issue with, like, for instance, Mazda. We always seem to have a decent supply of Mazdas at our Mazda store. But our big brands and the ones that are easiest to work with, Toyota and Honda and so forth, they still have the same issues of getting us cars. But I think that they've worked through it maybe a little better than a few of the other brands.
Yeah, well, JDM, they're on top of it out there.
Yep.
The Japanese are definitely on top of it. That's an interesting question. I always like to find out like who was able to have better supply than others and why that is. But obviously the chip shortages and all that stuff. Are car prices up in general still because the demand is still so high?
So again, that's kind of goes to the supply issue. If there's, depending on how many vehicles you have on the lot, might depend on how much we discount a car. Yeah. So, you know, there's a, the prices have gone up from the manufacturers to us, but
you got to offset that.
So if we have, for instance, if you're talking about a Chevy Silverado pickup, they've been very short supply. Mm-hmm. If I only have one today and I've got five people that want it, I have no incentive to discount it. So prices have gone up on a lot of models that are in high demand just from that standpoint, that the dealer is less motivated to negotiate because he's got somebody else that'll walk in right after and buy it for the sticker price.
Yeah. And that's just business. Hey.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. That's the way you got to do it. I'm a big Corvette C8 guy and okay. I will have one at some point when my sitcom gets picked up, that'll be my gift to me. But anyway,
<There you go. laughs>
but that's one of those cars that is exactly what you were saying. Like the demand for them was so high.
Yeah.
So like, they were going for way more than what, you know, the MSRP was, but rightfully so, you know, it's just that's the way it was.
We've had a waiting list on the Corvettes and there's a lot of discussion about whether, you know, a dealer should charge more than sticker price on something like that.
Yeah.
And we try not to, but there are occasions, for instance, on a Corvette like that, if we don't, a customer will come in and buy it for sticker price and turn around and flip it next week and make a $20,000 profit on it. So, it's a fine line. But yes, the high demand vehicles there are some of them, for instance, Corvettes that you just can't get them right now.
Yeah. And I heard that was happening a lot, not with just Corvettes, with many cars. Now the Z06 is out and you know, they're coming, the E-Ray, I don't know when that's going to be available. I just love that car, but that's one of those instances where that is definitely happening and rightfully so. You need to mark it up because the demand is there. What's the average interest rate currently? Like when someone finances a car, I don't know if you know that metric off the top of your head, but is it on the higher end right now or is that coming down?
Yeah, so I don't know it off the top of my head exactly what the average is, but in general, interest rates have gone over the last couple of years where, you know, a couple of years ago, 2-3% was normal. And now it's more in the 7-8% range, which has certainly affected the affordability of vehicles. And we see a lot of people that come in and want to trade their vehicle. They have a loan from a couple of years ago at a lower interest rate.
Right.
And it makes it hard to trade them into something new because now their rate go up significantly because of, so it's having, and it's definitely affecting affordability for people that are financing.
Yeah, definitely affecting affordability for sure. Because it's like if you're in a car that has, you know, you're like you said, your percentage 2-3%, you have that for a few years and then you go to get a new car and you're like, I want to pay what I'm paying now. And they're like, well, you can't necessarily pay that because the lowest interest rate we can give you is like 6.7% or whatever it is. So you're in that like weird, like, oh man, now I have to get a car that's less expensive that I might not really want or, you know, go used or this or that. But still, depending on what you go used, that interest rate might still be around then too. You know, it all depends on your budget.
Absolutely.
So yeah, that's an interesting thing too. But hopefully it will be coming down. Are incentives back at all? I know incentives were like just non-existent for very long.
Yeah. So obviously the manufacturers weren't putting incentives out when they had more customers than they had cars.
Right. Exactly.
During the shortages, there are incentives on some vehicles now. Obviously it's all a supply and demand issue. They're only going to put incentives on those vehicles that they need to boost a little bit in car sales. A lot of the incentives are switched to leasing rather than buying. So there might be a subvented money factor on a lease rather than a rebate on a retail purchase. So, but the manufacturers are all, you know, trying to figure out what's the sweet spot. We don't want to spend money on incentives, but we want to move the cars. And so that changes every month as they evaluate where they're at.
Yeah, it was crazy because I knew some dealerships were, you know, just creating their own incentives. They were being like, you know, you buy this car, we'll give you a free refrigerator. I don't know. I just right. make that make sense. Exactly. But it was like they were doing things like that because there were no incentives from the manufacturers at all. And so they were kind of doing it that way, trying to get creative during that whole thing. But I think they're coming back a little bit. Just curious, and I asked everyone this, are you a car guy? Did you always love cars, or you just love the business?
You know, I'm more of a guy that loves the business. You know, I don't know that much about
cars.
We
find there's both.
yeah, exactly. So, I love it when I'm driving a nice car, but I'm not a car aficionado. I've got a couple of our managers that will tell you every little detail about a vehicle, and I just have no clue, you know? So it's funny.
Yeah, that's perfectly fine. I mean, I'm a car guy. I love cars, and it's interesting, you know, where it's going with EVs. And EVs are great, and but like, you know, it's not an engine. You're not you know, you want to hear it like, and right. I like a manual transmission with certain cars, mm-hmm. and things like that. Are you finding that EVs are selling a lot more, or is it just kind of a steady at the rate it's been for a while? I mean, I think because the EVs are only like 6% or maybe 7% of market share.
Interesting. It's kind of a steady rate. We're talking about incentives. A lot of the incentives are on electric vehicles because the manufacturers, you know, are building them, but there's not demand. You know, the whole EV industry is somewhat of a government created situation and not a consumer driven.
Right. You know, yep.
We don't have huge numbers of customers coming in looking for electric cars. We do have some. And
sure.
And we have and it's probably growing a little bit, but it's still a very, very small segment of the market. You know, when you look at all the press that goes on around the electric vehicle industry, the vast majority of people coming in to buy a car want a internal combustion engine like they're
ICE.
Used to. Yes.
An ICE engine. It's funny you said that because you look at all the media. You're right. Like if you ask the average person how many people you think are driving EVs on the road, I bet you just from what they've been bombarded with on social media, on television, they'd probably be like, oh, I bet you at least 40 to 50% of cars out there are now EVs. And it's like, no, that is not the case at all. Nothing against EVs. Just saying that's kind of a, like I said, you ask the average person, they're going to think it's a lot more than it is.
Yeah. And a lot of people potentially be interested are kind of waiting. They're like, you know, the infrastructure is not there. The technology's couple of years, kind of perfect the whole electric car thing with that kind of money.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and you know, I've said this on the show a gazillion times, you know, once you could charge your car in the same amount of time it takes to fill your gas tank, now we're talking. That's really where it's got to be. And I think it's moving in that direction. They're getting, you know, electric cars are having way longer range and the technology is advancing. So, you know, I always think we're going to have both. I like electric cars. The instant torque is awesome. It's very fast. They're cool. I mean, it's like it's driving an iPhone, basically.
Right.
You know, and I think the happy medium will always be both. And obviously hybrids are the best of both worlds.
Sure.
I think it's going to keep growing and the business is going to keep changing. But I think it's definitely cool. But it's interesting how the average person would think there's a lot more EVs on the road than there really is right now.
Right.
Even though every manufacturer is like, by 2030, we're going to only have EVs. And it's like, come on, you should, you know, that's not that far away. And
yeah, it's crazy. You know, from a dealer standpoint, the frustrating thing with the EV market is that they're forcing us to put all sorts of infrastructure into our dealerships,
right.
You know, level three chargers, you know, so when you go to put a level three charger into a dealerships, the electrical infrastructure is not there. So now we're having to put a whole new, you know, we have to dig up the street, put a whole new electrical switch in to bring in that kind of power. And yep. So it becomes extremely expensive for us to put in all these chargers when the EV business is such a very, very small portion of what
exactly.
we do. Yeah. Yes,
and that cost falls on you.
Yes. And it's very, very expensive. Yes.
Yeah. And it's right, not to bring it back around to incentives again, but I was reading something the other day where, like, if you buy a brand new Tesla Model 3 in California, because the government incentives and all that, like, it was almost like $18,000 off the car.
Wow.
Which is like something insane. Like, yeah, but it's that's not in every state. That's in California, obviously.
Right.
But
right.
One of the last questions I want to ask, is there a piece of advice you'd give dealership owners, CEO, you know, folks that work at dealerships, CFOs, that maybe you've learned over the past couple of years that has helped, you know, for example, maybe a different way of handling, you know, the supply and demand shortage or figuring out, you know, just a cool way to do something different or something you've learned?
Well, the car business is all about the people. And what I've learned is that where I have really good, talented people in a dealership, that dealership operates well. And if I don't, then you end up with a lot of turnover, poor results. And so we focus so much on having the right people. And you're talking about if we were looking to expand and grow the organization, one of the things that limits our growth is whether we think we have the personnel, the human capital to go out and be successful if we were to go acquire, you know, a bunch of new dealerships. So the one thing is absolutely, we have some, I think our success has been that we don't try to do things with a short-term view. I look at a very long-term view. And one of that is to get good, solid people that are honest and ethical and hardworking and get them into the dealerships and then give them enough rope that they can run the dealership and put their own personality on it. And that's been our success. So I look at us compared to some of the public companies, that the public companies are so big that they obviously have to put in a lot of rules and bureaucracy and so forth in their organization. And we can operate better than them because we don't, you know, we're not as structured as they are. And it helps us to attract and retain better people. And if you got better people in the dealership, then that store is going to operate and function and perform better than if you don't.
Yeah. Absolutely. That is some great advice. And I'm sure a lot of people listening, a lot of people that, you know, dealership folks would listen to that and take that to heart. Speaking of honest and ethical, though, I feel I have to mention, you know, when I was reading up on you, Tyler's involved in a lot of good causes fighting cancer. So you're one of those good people that work at the dealership. And I read something, you were named, I don't even know what this is, but Best Buddies National Champion
Best
of the Year.
Best Buddies they help people that are developmentally and intellectually disabled. And so we raised
awesome.
a record amount of money for them a year or so ago. So yeah, we love getting involved in the community. We love getting involved in charities and trying to give back to the community. And we kind of feel like that's our obligation. We've been very successful and people have supported us. So we're trying to give back wherever we can and make our communities where we operate a little bit better place to live.
Yeah, definitely. That's great. Love to hear it. And that you yourself and your dealerships, you know, are involved in a lot of great causes. But Tyler, I thank you so much for taking the time. I know we had some hiccups with the audio in some spots, but we got through it. We covered a lot of topics and I appreciate you coming on the show.
It's been great. Thanks, Derek. It's good talking with you.
Absolutely. Good talking with you as well. And have a great rest of your day.
Okay, you too.
Thanks, man. Again, that was Tyler Corder, the CFO and COO of Finley Auto Group. For more info on Tyler and their auto group, head to finleyauto.com. That's FindlayAuto.com. And that will do it for this episode 12 of season 6 of DNT. Make sure you follow us on social media at Dealer News Today. I'm your host, Derek D, DerekD.com for all my stuff. I appreciate you listening, everybody. But until next time, this is Dealer News Today.